Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We begin with Syria this hour, and this is just a piece of this very disturbing story. The United Nations Security Council tried and failed over the weekend to come up with a way of addressing the worsening situation in Syria. A resolution worked over and revised, even Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and other senior officials numerous times working this resolution to avoid a veto. In the end, it was shut down by two vetoes, China and Russia, on Saturday. And within hours, this was the sound on the streets of the Syrian city of Homs. Forces loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad have launched one of the fiercest attacks yet on the city. Round after round of heavy artillery fire being reported by our partner, the BBC. Rebels say a medical clinic is being targeted, at least a dozen dead, but there have been reports over the weekend of hundreds dead. Few Western reporters have been able to get inside the country to report on what's going on this morning. Paul Wood, who has been smuggled into the country by rebel fighters, sent this dispatch from Homs.
At the makeshift clinic, the body of a seven-year-old girl was being carefully wrapped in a white sheet, ready for burial. She'd been at home when a mortar bomb came through the roof, killing her and wounding her mother and sister. There was a moment of quiet as they took her away, but by mid-morning in this part of Homs, the bombs were falling steadily, about a minute apart. A teenage boy was brought in with horrific injuries, most of his face gone. They didn't know if he would make it. Burials are taking place at night, they told us. There was too much danger from snipers to hold funerals in the day. In the corridor, a woman was screaming. Her only son had just been brought in on a stretcher, his left foot severed by a blast. She was hysterical, but not incoherent. Give us guns. We can't defend ourselves, she shouted, before someone led her away. Most of the injured we saw were civilians, and many were children. We did see two fighters at the clinic, one dead, one injured. Anyway, the fighters have only Kalashnikovs against the heavy weapons possessed by the security forces. Towards the end of the bombardment, along with the mortars, we also heard the distinctive whistle of heavy artillery. As I write this, there seems to be a pause, but after a whole morning of shelling, people in the streets were jumpy, running for cover at the slightest sound.
Firing at us, right?
Yep.
One woman told me she never let her children out in the street at all. Aged 7 and 5, they followed her around the house, crying when there was an explosion. All day long, the mosques have kept up a repetitive cry of God is great to announce each fresh martyr, as they call the dead. There is fury against Russia and China for vetoing the UN Security Council resolution. Most people feel very alone, abandoned by the outside world, and expecting the worst from a regime they fear is now able to act without restraint.
And Paul Wood there, right in the middle of all of it, from our partner, the BBC, reporting from the city of Homs. For more on the violence and the apparent diplomatic isolation of Syria right now, we turn to Tony Bedran, a research fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He joins us from right here in New York. Tony, just where do we stand at this point right now? That's extraordinary sound from Homs. And, of course, you know all the diplomatic activity that took place over the weekend.
Right. I mean, the situation at the Security Council finally, I think, was a moment of clarity, as it were, in terms of dispelling any illusion or delusion that there was going to be a grand sort of multilateral political solution to the Syrian crisis. That was never going to happen. And now what we're seeing is the reality on the ground, and that is that the Syrian regime never had any intention for a political solution. It is there to fight it to the very end. And the only thing that's capable, therefore, of countering that is an equal force on the ground to balance the power equation. And that means that ultimately the rebels on the ground are going to have to be supported.
So are you saying that it looks to you as though the United States and some of the Western powers on the Security Council were, in a sense, going through the motions, understanding full well that there was no international consensus that was going to produce a political solution because they're too scared to actually do anything that would have an impact?
Well, I'm not sure what their intention with Russia was. They've been courting the Russians for months now, and they had already vetoed once before. So I'm not really sure what they thought they could achieve by getting Russia to agree to the resolution, because there was no way of implementing it anyway. But be that as it may, I think as far as the U.S. and its European allies go, it's been very clear that they have absolutely no intention of direct interference in Syrian affairs. They are only right now restricted to sanctions, and you heard Secretary Clinton yesterday, humanitarian relief and some effort to unify the opposition, which frankly is utterly irrelevant at this point. I mean, the only relevant party on the ground right now is not the Muslim Brotherhood. It's not the secular opposition groups, be it on the ground in Syria or in exile. It's really the consortium of militias and defectors from the military called the Free Syrian Army. And that's the only thing right now that's standing between Assad crushing the revolution with Russian blessing, it appears. I mean, and they gave him ample time to do so. And what really could be a chance for the opposition to win.
You know, in the last minute, I'm listening to that voice in Paul Wood's dispatch there from Homs and just wondering how abandoned she must feel knowing that just next door there was this huge intervention in the nation of Iraq. Now, the situations aren't comparable necessarily, but how abandoned are the Syrian people at this point?
I think they realize full well that they're on their own. I mean, you can hear it in their slogans and in their cries and their denunciation of Russia and China. But it's interesting, another thing that she says. She says, where do I get arms? And there's other reports of people saying, where do I send money to the Free Syrian Army? Where can we arm ourselves? I think basically the Russian veto at the United Nations and the whole political policy that was the U.S. policy that was pursued at the United Nations pretty much set the stage for where we are right now, which is a long period of protracted conflict.
And very disturbing dispatches out of cities like Homs and Aleppo and all around the nation of Syria. Tony Badran, research fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, thanks so much.
Thank you.